Hello, everybody. This is Granny Garbanzo, and you're listening to the medley with Blake, Crash, Fredo. I hope you have a wonderful time and lots of fun.
Hello, everyone. This is Blake Crash Prittle, and welcome to another awesome episode of The Medley. This week's episode is a double feature. Our first guest is a talented dancer, actor, and clown, Grindel Kuchierka, who is perhaps best known as her role of Granny Garbanzo in the 1990s children's television series The Big Comfy Couch. She'll tell us all about her awesome career and her time on the set of The Big Comfy Couch. Then we'll have travel writer and keynote speaker Doug Lansky, who is best known for writing the Sign-Spotting books. So sit back, get comfy, and enjoy. Well, Grindel, thank you very much for joining us today. It's great to have you on the show.
Hey, thanks for inviting me, Blake. I'm very happy to be here.
Start by telling us how you got into the entertainment industry and how you became a clown.
Well, I was in a dance company in Vancouver, the Paula Ross Dancers. I met a fellow there, Sam Walton, and we had a lot of fun. And we created a comedy dance, a tango, and performed it at a show that had other dances in it. Very serious modern dance, because I was into modern dance, and people loved the tango. They loved it. One thing led to the next, and we got a grant from the Ontario Arts Council to choreograph an evening of comedy dance. So we did. Everybody loved it, and we loved it too. I mean, people were laughing. So I was becoming a clown without knowing it. A clown, Ron Wagner, came and saw this show and asked me if I wanted to tour the East Coast with his company called the Maritime Clown and Puppet Theater. And so I did, and he taught me to put makeup on, and I made my costume, and I had a big pair of shoes, and that was it.
Is that how you landed your iconic role as Granny Garbanzo from Big Comfy Couch?
Yeah, more or less, yes. Cheryl Wagner was a clown in that company, and we became friends. And then she had the idea to create the Big Comfy Couch and said, you're going to be in it.
Where did the character Granny Garbanzo come from? What was the inspiration behind that?
My mother and father. And the character that I first created, of my first clown, her name was Rosa Reddy. And the name of the duo was the Flying Galwampkes. We spoke with an accent. My parents spoke with an accent, so I had some great material. They're from the Ukraine. They came as a very young couple. They were in their early 20s, and they had my little baby sister, who had been born in Germany. They had fled the Ukraine, and they came to Canada. That's what's happening right now as we speak, with other young couples and their children. And I actually had my dad's suitcase that he came with, this whole suitcase, and it had all this cloth handle on it. It was down in the basement, and I thought, oh, this is when I was first becoming a clown. And I thought, oh, can I have that, Dad? And I did a lot of street performing, Blake, a lot in Europe. And that was one of my most favorite things to do as a clown, was street festivals. And I had that old suitcase of his.
Yes, you know I'm going to ask you to do the voice of Granny Garbanzo, right?
I know you are.
Granny Garbanzo is so funny, and she always used to make me laugh when I would watch The Big Comfy Couch. I especially like the episode where she made borscht brownies.
Oh, yeah, she did a lot of borscht. She can't beat a beat.
Did anything funny or memorable happen when filming The Big Comfy Couch?
Oh, we had so much fun. You know, I would just could hardly wait to get to work. And would stay to the last minute. It was really a lot of fun. We had so much fun. I can't just pick one thing. You know, that was really great when we did the cooking show. We had a lot of fun doing that. A lot of fun doing that. And all the dances that we did and the songs that we sang and the working with Lunette was wonderful, and with Major Bedhead, you know, we were a great company of people. We all got along just wonderfully and had so much fun. Auntie Macassar, and it was really quite wonderful.
If the show ever got a reboot, would you play Granny Garbanzo again?
In a heartbeat. Yes, absolutely.
I do know that Alison Court went on tour playing Lunette in some other countries and other parts of Canada and the U.S. Did you go on the tour as well?
Yes, I did. Yes, we did. We toured in the States.
What was that like? Were people in the United States as familiar with The Big Comfy Couch as they are in Canada?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I'd hear little voices, "Hi, Granny, I love you." I mean, it's pretty wonderful.
Well, speaking of going on tour, I know that you have done performances in other countries. Can you tell us a little bit about the other places that you visited and performed in?
Well, I did a lot of performing in Europe, in Holland and France, a little bit in Germany, and Women's Clown Festival in Andorra. I went to Japan twice, and I went to India. I spent a month in India, and Singapore, and Rio de Janeiro, and all over Canada. This gal's been around.
What's the hardest part about being a clown? Because I can imagine that there's a lot of challenging aspects about clowning, such as doing tricks and things like that.
It's a very physical art form. I think the demand of any kind of performance. I was a silent clown in my own show, so it was a very physical, it demands a lot of physical energy, and you have to really communicate with everyone. There's no fourth wall, if you will. I think it's the physical energy, the amount of energy that it takes to be a clown.
Do you have any inspirations? Because I know a lot of comedians get inspiration from other work, and there's a lot of famous clowns out there, you know, like the Three Stooges and Abbott and Costello and Bozo the Clown. Did any of those comedians inspire you?
Well, I mean, like, there's just so many of them. You know, a list is going in my head right now. You know, like, as a kid, there was the Three Stooges, and there was Jerry Lewis, and there was the Marx Brothers, and there's a lot of them. But you know, like, there's a lot of wonderful European clowns that are contemporary clowns, like Dimitri Clown from Switzerland, and from the Republic of Czech, Polivka, Cibor Turba. We have wonderful Canadian clowns, Al Simmons, Tomasz Kubinek. There's so many wonderful clowns to draw inspiration from.
Where's your next big show going to be?
My next big show. I might be doing a show in July in Brantford. So that's yet to be. My next big show is a book I've written.
Ooh, do tell.
Well, I worked for many years, like 13 or 14 years, with a dog. The title of the book is A Dog and His Clown, and it's written from his perspective. It's taken me 10 years to write the book. It's been quite a project, Blake, because the paper was handmade with my roadie. I had a roadie, Marika de Hoop, in Holland, and she's also a paper maker. So she saw that I was writing this book, and she said, you should write a book, and then when Charlie passes, you come with the material that he had in the show, like his tie and his blanket, and we will make paper out of it. And then you can create the book with this paper. And I did. So it's about 50 pages, drawings. I did drawings, and then I wrote hand-printed on the other side. And I'm going to go and work with my artist friend in Vancouver. She's a painter, Cece Lamb. And we're going to put the book together. So that's the next step.
That sounds like a very interesting book. And maybe when that's done, maybe you could write a short book about your time on the big comfy couch. Maybe you and Allison Cord and Fred Stinson could all work on one together.
That's a really good idea.
What advice would you give to somebody that wants to follow your footsteps and become a clown or a mime or a professional dancer?
Whenever I do a workshop, one of the first things I say is, if I can give you one thing to walk out of this workshop, it would be the desire to have a self-practice, like to work on yourself, to have a discipline, an expression of yourself, to create your own thing. Take lots of workshops. Really study life.
I think that's fantastic advice. And speaking of music, on one episode, Granny Garbanzo played the concertina. Do you play any musical instruments yourself?
Yes, I do. I play the guitar and dulcimer. I do have an album of my songs that I recorded 9 years ago. So I'm very much into music. What I'm really into these days is playing the piano.
How can people keep up to date with you in terms of performances that you're going to be doing and workshops that you have planned?
They can go to my website, grindle.ca, and I post things there, and they can find out about me there too, you know, like find out all my history and places I've been and festivals. And then I do post when I will be doing things.
Thank you so very much for joining us today, Grendel. It's great to have you here, and we wish you all the best going forward.
Thank you very much, Blake, and I wish the same for you.
And that was Grendel Kaczyrka telling us all about her awesome career. You can find out more about Grendel by visiting her website, grindle.ca. And there you can purchase her album called Simple Girl. I had to listen to a couple of the songs from that album, and I think you'll really enjoy it. Next up, here's travel writer Doug Lansky. How did your passion for travel turn into a career?
So I traveled around the world, working my way around, and with the thought that I was going to try to come back and become a screenwriter or a journalist of some kind. And then when I got, you know, hit by a car in Bangkok, what year was that? That would have been about 1994. So I was laying in the hospital with a fake press pass I bought in Thailand in Bangkok for a couple bucks, and it's kind of staring at it. I'm like, well, that'd be kind of a cool job. And I came back home, and you know, you go from being global traveler with 2.5 years under your belt and whatever, 40 countries, to suddenly being unemployed guy living at home. That transformation takes all of 30 seconds, and that lit a fire under my ass to do something. And I wanted to try to make it as a freelance travel writer. And that's was tough. I worked my ass off. I was working 12, 14 hours a day, sending in submissions, writing articles, following up. And within a couple months, I went from zero to being offered a nationally syndicated travel column with the Chicago Tribune Syndicate. And I signed a 5-year contract with them, and they said, get lost and do a weekly column. It was called Vagabond. It was kind of like humor, travel stuff. And when that started, that kind of led itself to doing some work for NPR, which also doesn't pay. None of this stuff paid. Did some books. Those were pretty small potato stuff as well that kind of helped make things go round. And yeah, that's how I slipped on a banana peel and into this career.
What was your most memorable adventure?
Yeah, there were lots. I mean, I was doing crazy crap. It's kind of like when you're starting to learn how to ski and you're on the bunny slope and then you work up to the intermediate and the advanced. And then after you've been there for a couple of years, you're like rappelling into these narrow slot canyons and doing crazy stuff. Not everyone, but you know, it can go that way. And I kind of felt like that happened for me as I was getting more and more adventurous. I've been traveling for a while. I started doing dumber and dumber things. So I met these two travelers going up the cargo ship up the Amazon, and we got as far as we could get. We rented a dugout canoe with a 50 horsepower engine and a few vats of gasoline and a driver, and said, take us as far as you can up these little tributaries. We're going to find some indigenous people to go live with. We had no plan. And yeah, we were living with this, we found this tribe of like kind of sort of naked people, you know, like wearing just loincloths, and we had a thatched roof they let us string up our hammocks under, and we stayed with them for like a week. And you gotta get lucky. I mean, there was any number of little minivan rides in Southeast Asia and other places where the drivers are either drunk or just maniacs and, you know, passing on blind curves, and you probably shouldn't be alive. Been in some bus crashes. I actually traveled with my own seatbelt. Started doing that. I mean, you gotta get a little bit lucky, and don't do too many stupid things, and hopefully you make it back in one piece.
I know that you've written a lot of books for Lonely Planet, and I think your most popular books, in my opinion, are the sign spotting books. I mean, I have all of them. I've been collecting them since I was 12. Where did the idea for those books come from?
Yeah, so I started, the way that happened was I was just taking pictures of some funny signs when I was out traveling, and when I got back from my big, you know, 2.5 year trip, and I would show my friends some pictures. I had a stack of pictures I was traveling with, and I go, hey, you want to see some pictures from my trip? And they're like, not really. And they're like, here, just flip through them a little bit. And most of them were me with a snake, or me in the jungle, or me doing some crazy thing here and there. And I had a couple of some funny road signs in there. And I noticed that the road signs were the ones that people stopped and looked at a little more carefully. They didn't really care about the pictures of me. And I thought, yeah, maybe there's something there. And so I had a baby at the same time I wanted to kind of not renew my contract to keep traveling around the world. And I thought, what am I going to do now? So I thought I just kind of swapped it out. Like I started, you know, doing this kind of funny road sign every week instead of a whole column so I could stay home and be a dad and see my kid versus being on the road all the time. And so that's kind of how that launched. And then Tony Wheeler, the founder of Lonely Planet, was in Stockholm, and I was interviewing him because I was the editor of the in-flight travel magazine here. And we went kayaking after the interview, and then I said, hey, want to come back to my place for some dinner? And he did. And then I said, hey, I have like 50,000 funny road signs I've been collecting, and I heard you collect them too. And he goes, yeah, I do. And then he didn't ask me anything, so I didn't talk about it anymore. And like a month later, he emailed me and said, hey, why don't you do a book for us? And then that's how this happened. As you mentioned it.
I've read the books backwards and forwards as a kid, and I have to say that one of my favorite signs in that book is the Pakistan Narcotics Control Board sign, and then there's marijuana growing around it. Which is kind of funny.
Yeah, there's some classics in there.
there was a sign where they misspelled sweet and sour pork and it said sweat and sour pork. That's another one that I really liked.
Yeah, there's some classic ones. There was one that said something like, God, I gotta remember. It was like bottomless pit. It was like a bridge and it said like bottomless pit. And then it said 30 feet deep. And it just like, the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing in most of these cases. It's just kind of a fun lack of communication. I mean, you just imagine these scenes where these guys are there putting up the sign and they're like, are we really supposed to put this thing here? I guess that's what the order says. Just do it. We're going to get fired if we don't do it. So just do the thing. And I mean, you know, they got to be thinking about it along the way, at least some of them. It's fun stuff. I'm glad you liked it.
Oh, thank you. And it inspired me to take pictures of my own funny signs. I think the one that I found that I thought was kind of ironic, it was a sign that said, a sign I found in Calgary, it said, no parking in the driveway. Where are you supposed to park?
Exactly. The parkway. There's some classics like that. I'm glad that you found some as well. I think there's no shortage. These things, and you know, it's a little bit like kind of spotting rainbows. It's like, they kind of have to find you. You just have to kind of be ready and receptive and keep your eyes open. And every once in a while, you stumble upon a gem.
Tell us about some of the other books that you wrote.
Yeah, I did some travel guide books, like how to travel around the world, how to get jobs in different countries, how to sort of do overland segments, practical stuff. And then I did some collections of my columns, you know, just all these different little adventures that ran in different newspapers. And then this series, and then I actually did a book of funny bar tricks. I didn't just collect the funny road signs. I collected bar tricks from different bartenders around the world. And then I assembled all those into a book a while ago. Needed to pay the rent somehow. It's been a crazy adventure. I never expected this when I started out. I just wanted to go see the world and ended up here, living in Stockholm. I mean, I never saw this coming in a million years.
And that was travel writer and keynote speaker Doug Lansky. You can find out more about his interesting work on his website, douglansky.com. And if you're looking for a laugh, I highly recommend that you purchase one of his sign-spotting books. Well, that's our show. And remember, here at The Medley, we're all kinds of different.